never sleeps, pal. Hey there, this is Conan Brophy from Create Sound, and this is episode 34 of Money Never Sleeps, a podcast that looks inside the head of entrepreneurs and at what makes them do what they do. This episode is kindly sponsored by Ireland's fintech and financial services recruitment specialists, Top Tier Recruitment. If you or a colleague need help attracting and retaining great talent for your fintech or financial services company, I highly recommend you have a chat with the team at Top Tier Recruitment, as they really know their stuff. You can find them at www.toptierrecruitment.com and tell them we sent you. It took us a few more episodes than expected to get Pete Townsend to take the hot seat and have Owen Fitzgerald get inside his head. Pete is the founder of Norio Ventures, a specialist advisory firm partnering with fintech founders and established players in financial services to get new products to market and secure funding. It's totally appropriate that Pete is featured on episode number 34, as that's the uniform number of David Ortiz, or Big Pappy as he's affectionately known, the greatest clutch hitter in the history of Pete's beloved Boston Red Sox. We do touch on baseball a bit in this episode, but mostly it's Owen trying to figure out what is inside Pete's head that makes him do what he does. On with the show.
Here we go again. Welcome back to Money Never Sleeps, recording here in the offices of Top Tier Recruitment in WeWork, Dublin Landings. I'm Owen Fitzgerald, and in the hot seat today is my co-host,
Pete Townsend.
Pete, nice to have you on the show properly this time.
Thank you, Owen. It's about time.
It is about time. I can't believe it's taken us this long to actually talk to you.
I know.
What it is you do. So, I obviously know very well, but for anyone that doesn't, why don't you tell us what it is you do, Pete?
I help startups. I can put that in three words.
That's great.
Okay, with everything that I am, I help startups. And with, what does that mean? Well, my sweet spot, because of the track record of my career, is in fintech. But fintech to me is starting to be a bit of an outdated term. I think eventually it will just all dissolve back into tech. But generally, it's I will help founders that where I can become passionate about their product, about their team, about what they're doing. And I help them a few different ways.
And why don't you tell us about the career to date and how you got to where you are now with Norio?
I launched Norio Ventures on the 10th November 2016. Still remember the incorporation date. I've got a semi-photographic memory, and I could still see the document that came through email that was kind of the, you know, defining moment of my career, believe it or not, when I had absolutely nothing going on when I started the business. But I have always worked for blue chip organizations. Started with Fidelity in the 90s, and that was a great place to start the career in Boston, where I'm from originally, and then moved to Bermuda in 2000 and worked for 6 years in various client servicing, technology, operations, investor relations roles within a hedge fund servicing business, and then moved to Ireland in 2006. Started working for BNP Paribas. Had left Bermuda when we got to the point where there was no longer any reason to go to the beach, right? Because the sand at the beach was just so sticky and you just didn't want to deal with that. So we started renting boats, $140 for the afternoon on Saturdays. We're like, why are we doing this? So we left that beautiful island of Bermuda and came to this beautiful island. My wife is from Dublin, so made a lot of sense. I always wanted to give it a shot living here. In 1994, I went to UCG, NUIG for those new schoolers, but I still call it UCG in Galway, for 6 months on an exchange program and loved it and always wanted to try to find a way back here. So through a 6 month tour in, you know, a 6 year tour in Bermuda, eventually with my wife, found my way here to Ireland. So did 10 years with BNP Paribas before I decided that it was time to go out on my own.
And tell me, we've had a lot of different people on the show who've come here to Ireland. Did you come to work, or did you come to follow your wife or to meet your wife?
I came here for life. What life? Like, is it a prison sentence? It's not. It's there's just something about Ireland that resonates more with me than the United States of America does right now. And, you know, you can look at the politics going on in the U.S., but that was never, you know, that's only been the last couple of years. There's something about the history here. I tell people that I came back to reclaim the bloodline because I've got some Irish blood,
Boston, yeah.
You know, going back to West Cork in the 1840s. And, you know, but it's, I kind of lost my reference point when I moved from Boston to Bermuda in 2000. And, you know, Bermuda is such a unique, crazy, yet incredibly opportunistic place to live and get things done and make some great global relationships that I you know, made the best of it and had a lot of fun while I was there, but learned a heck of a lot. Some of the darkest days of my career were there, where it was figuring out some very, very difficult problems around hedge funds, which, you know, if I hadn't gone through that, I wouldn't have been where I was today, where I am today. Having all those experiences, were pretty helpful to get things to the point where I am today.
And, you know, you talk about working with startups and helping startups. How much of it has been a learning experience for you over the course of the last 2 years or more?
You know, we had Brian Norton on episode one, right? I remember clearly, and I see it in my head, a slide that he had up at Dogpatch Labs when he's talking about startups, and that, you know, he's got a picture up of the wilderness,
yeah,
right, the woods. Yeah. And, you know, I was a little boy lost in the woods when I started. I thought that being a commercially friendly COO, which is what I was at BNP Paribas until my last year, where I took a lateral move into global head of product development for the hedge fund servicing business. I thought that, you know, sure, I'd jump right into consulting. And I thought I'd start up an asset management consultancy and an asset servicing consultancy. And two things kind of happened. One, I had a gig right away, which was great, with Irish Funds. I ran a Brexit committee for them. Shout out to Pat Lardner. He's a good friend and does a great job running Irish Funds. And that, you know, having that initial client was obviously very helpful for getting the business off the ground. But I think at the same time, what happened was that realizing that why I wanted to go out on my own was to help startups. Something clicked at some stage where it was like, well, I'm not going to go after these big relationships with these big corporate clients. I'm going to dig in to where I can really be myself. And that was with helping startups. And had the first real gig probably part of the way through 2017 with Assure Hedge here in Dublin, who are protecting foreign currency cash flows and do it with a very straightforward FX hedging tool for corporates, for individuals, on a B2B basis, on a B2B2C basis. Long story around them. But that was my first true experience where I kind of went from thinking about startups very romantically to this is wonderful. I can walk into Dogpatch Labs and see these electrons falling in front of my face. And the fact of the matter is, when you sit down and start working with startups, no matter what you think as an advisor, that your plan is to help them, that when you kind of realize that, well, there are other things going on, we need to get funding. Let's see what we can do to help them get funding. And that's kind of where some of the new, not new things, but the things that I started to do really well for startups, where that came from.
And we had Stefan on last week from For Securitas, and he talked about obviously having spent his time, devoting his time to building his product, but actually maybe underestimating the time he needed on the funding side and also then in terms of, you know, the marketing and getting the product to market. Is, when looking back in the last two and a bit years now, is there anything that you would say you probably underestimated or maybe should have focused on when you stepped out from and started setting up Norio and working with startups?
I think if you take that analogy and take the funding and take the product development, right? So my product development has been working with startups and going to retrain my brain about how startups work versus how the corporate world works. One of the great books that helped me do that is Clayton Christensen's Innovator's Dilemma, right? Which gave me a better insight into the corporate mindset and how inertia is such a big thing that drives how corporates make decisions. And that was my lifeblood for 20 years, right? Learning about startups and how they do things. Another great book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz, where there is no handbook, right? And if I was to look at startups and how I'm helping them as creating a product that I then sell as advisory, but what's the fundraising side of my business? Because there are things that need to be there to pay the bills. No one is going to make a mint off of advising startups, right? That is something that is kind of creating a baseline of cash flow for Norio Ventures as a business. If you were to look at what the true fundraising could have been, it could have been the much bigger corporate gigs, right? Where you're doing 20 to 30 day engagements over a couple of months at a much higher day rate, which would raise a lot more money for the business as a whole. I just kind of drew the line at where my passion works best, and it's with startups. Like I said, I didn't try incredibly hard to make the business work with corporates, and I still do some corporate consulting, but it can be quite short term. And that, listen, they've got a singular problem where they want to find a way to solve that, rally the troops together for a half a day or a day, lead them through a workshop, show them how startups think, how they're making decisions, what the prioritization is like, and say, all right, here's how we get you from point A to point B within a month. Right. And, you know, whether it be a new product that they're trying to get to market, a new venture they're trying to build, you know, so that, you know, in thinking back, it's been 2.5 years. I probably could have funded the business better with some of those bigger engagements if I had gone after them. But what that would have meant was kind of not going against my ideals, but you know, not getting that hardcore experience with startups, which is
you stepped away.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and you know, one of the conversations I had before I stepped away with Joe Godinho, who's a friend of mine, he's an ex-Intel product builder, and he and I spent a few days in my office back in the BNP Paribas days, and we were coming up with an idea for a bit of a spinoff for BNP Paribas around blockchain, as you could guess. I wouldn't get into it at this stage. But going through that process, I said to Joe afterwards, I'm like, where we came up with a business model, we ripped it down, we reinvented it, we came up with a costing model, a organizational building model, how are we going to do all this? And just the continuous challenging and poking and prodding at that and seeing how we would make it work. We didn't do anything with it, but I said, Joe, I love doing that. He's like, Pete, well, you should look at venture capital. So I did. And calling the business Norio Ventures wasn't just, well, to get some attention. It's because that's the, you know, I started this with a 3 to 5 year plan to say that's how long it's going to take me to retrain my brain and to go from understanding how others invest, which through a 21 year career in asset management in the hedge fund industry, I get how others invest, but how am I going to invest? Right. And what's my criteria? So, you know, we're 2.5 years in at this stage.
And you've mentioned before about being naturally helpful. Do you think does that work against you, given that working with startups will sometimes require more than just what you've been asked or, you know, been specifically hired to do?
Yes, it does. I mean, I, you know, I say to people sometimes, listen, I'll just do this out of the goodness of my heart. But, you know, Owen, you and I have talked about, you know, maybe 2019 is the year where Pete starts to say no, right? Where I go from 10 to 12 things that I'm working on to focusing on 2 to 3. I mean, right now I'm an advisor to QPQ, who are doing some incredible things around smart legal contracts.
Yeah, a shout out to Greg, who we had on the show.
Absolutely, Greg Chu. Also FXCH, who are a cryptocurrency clearinghouse. Frank McCulish is running that business. Circuit with David Heath. I absolutely love what they're doing. And it's, as my friend Kenny Estes would say in Westloop Ventures in Chicago, we say it's the boring stuff that gets you most excited if you've been in the capital markets and you're looking at tech for a long time. I also do some work with the Scottish Irish Finance Initiative, helping to build bridges between Scotland and Ireland. I do some work for a number of other startups, some consulting on the corporate side. I spent a lot of time last year with 11FS. All of these experiences have got me to this point where I have that confidence and that conviction that kind of hit me in November, December last year, where it was that, okay, well, part of the output of what I do when I'm helping startups is that there's a natural point where, well, that startup needs funding. And if you get involved with them on a pre-seed basis, you know, or a post-seed basis looking at Series A, that's kind of my sweet spot where it's my relationships I've built up through the years, there are conversations I'm going to be able to have. And they're not easy. And cracking into having relationships with venture capital firms is not easy. You got to go there when you have nothing to show them, because otherwise they think you're just some slimy guy looking to get your percentage off a raise, which isn't the way I do it at all, right? It's that, you know, you try to build up a relationship, and I've said to them, listen, I'm only going to put deals in front of you that I would actually invest in myself. And then it was kind of like, well, why am I not investing in them myself? Why don't I go raise a fund? So there's a couple different projects we're looking at right now for how that's going to be made possible this year.
And like you said, there's 10 or 12 that you listed off already. You didn't even mention the Coinbase piece of work that you're doing. Which is
yes. So just appointed as independent non-executive director for Coinbase Ireland. So had the first board meeting with them last night. That's incredibly exciting. You know, Coinbase are leading the way globally on the crypto side of things in terms of their wallets, their custody side, with their different products. Really excited, just, you know, tip of the iceberg stuff that I've done with them so far. So, you know, trying to be an asset to that business here in Ireland for them.
And it's pretty clear because I know, look, we've a good relationship. We kind of vibe off each other on a lot of things. My wife always wonders why I'm getting involved in so many things. And I always tell her, you know, I'm playing a long game. I don't really know what that means half the time. She definitely doesn't know what I mean. She thinks I'm talking shite half the time. But to me, and I know from talking to you, it's, you know, a lot of the stuff, it sounds like a lot of the stuff you've worked on in the last kind of two and a bit years has been with a view to seeing, like, they'll all end up paying dividend, I suppose, if you want to call it that, in some shape or form. It's just trying to connect the dots then eventually. You know, it's been helping you, it's been helping your experience, but it's with a view to connecting the dots in some shape or form down the line. And I kind of take that approach myself. It sounds like that's kind of what you've been doing.
Exactly. And I do say no to people, right? And where I say no is where I know that I'm not really going to be able to help. I'm not going to get passionate about their product because it's something in retail. Right. Or, you know, mostly B2C. And that's just an area where the skills I have and the relationships I have just won't be that helpful. I can look at the business and give them my professional opinion and what I think they're going to do. But I do where I like to combine things together is to say, well, for example, QPQ have a major part of their infrastructure, which is based on distributed ledger technology. FXCH are a crypto clearinghouse that also have a distributed ledger backend, right? So I've said it there, distributed ledger twice. And then if you go over to Circuit, you know, crypto, the FXCH is clearly a fintech type play because it's a clearinghouse, which is a financial technology thing. Circuit are fintech, right? So there's that connectivity right there just between those three. And then working with the Scottish Irish Finance Initiative, being their fintech lead, right? I get to tell stories about what these startups are doing and how they're becoming more and more important to the Irish economy and to the Scots economy as well, which is something that I'm having some interesting conversations on. So yes, there's those connectivity points. If they weren't there, I couldn't do 10 or 12 things, yeah. Right? I've tried to say a good venture capital general partner will have eight, right? Eight investments that they've directed, that they've guided. Four of those will be where they take board seats, where they have more of an active involvement in increasing the odds of startup success. Four, they will be board observers, right? Where they have a less active role. Using that number of eight is kind of where I want to get to, and being able to do that in a scenario where I am making investments of and going out to get investors to deliver capital to the startups I work with, rather than having to go approach, you know, other venture capital firms to get them interested in the startups that I've become passionate about. That's something that's become quite important to me.
And let's talk about some of the other loves that you have. You mentioned baseball before.
Yeah.
It's long been a passion. I doubt you get too many games anymore, do you?
No, I don't. But the MLB.TV app is really good. And it's off season right now. The Red Sox won the World Series in 2018. And just so you know, the World Series isn't like, well, this is the only, you know, baseball championship in the world. The story goes that before the Boston Globe newspaper was around, there was a Boston World, and they sponsored the first World Series.
Okay. Now,
there's some truth to that. There's some embellishment to that that I've heard different stories, but just that's where World Series came from. But yeah, huge Red Sox fan. I mean, the first thing that I do in the morning during baseball season is look to see if the Red Sox won, yeah. Right? And, you know, get the app, look at the highlights. During the off season, you know, I'm looking at other stuff every morning. I mean, you know, during the season, it's baseball first. Then fintech second, you know, so it's, I have the Financial Times curated and have a full, you know, email coming from them with all the top stories every morning. Finextra, I get their stuff every morning. Chris Skinner's, the Financer blog is good. I'm looking at CoinDesk, you know, all within 15 to 20 minutes of every morning just to keep myself current on what's going on and find new ideas for connecting the dots. But baseball first, huge music fan. Big fan of U2. We've talked about this before. You know, Bono can get a bad name in Ireland just because he's so you know, stuck his head way above the parapet. And probably grew three more heads, the size of a hot air balloon, which is fine. You're a rock star. That's what happens, right? You get a bit full of yourself. But, you know, I've separated that connotation from actually enjoying the music, right? Where I get a lot of, you know, call it motivation, not even motivation, but just call it, okay, yeah, I hear a song that I really like. It gets the blood flowing, right? You get your blood flowing, you get into this stuff, and you just start delivering.
And going back to the baseball, you obviously naturally love the sport, but do you think the statistics side of it, you've mentioned before, you
know, yeah,
does it add to loving the sport?
It does. Baseball is a very statistical game. One of my favorite statistics is called wins above replacement, which basically, in a nutshell, says this is a number of wins out of 162 game season that a single player would contribute. Right. And the best players would be 10, right? 10 wins above replacement of all time. Right. And that's to say you're responsible for 10 out of 162. So if you calculate the amount of revenue that a team makes over 162 games, you can get to the amount of money that you should pay a player that contributes 10 wins, hence Moneyball. Right. So I was motivated a few years ago to try to come up with some type of statistical analysis in asset management to determine how asset managers would make money. And I'm like, well, if I were able to get that right, I could predict the stock market. Right. And there's plenty of people trying to do that. But statistics stuck in my head in 1993 when I was in the dumb kids class in high school. My first year of college at the University of Massachusetts, I had to catch up because I was so far behind. Like, I just let math go when I was in high school. I didn't really do much with it. The first couple of years in college, got caught up. In 93 was kind of my coming of age with statistics. And that taking that course just made so much sense in my head because of the baseball statistics and everything I had done with, you know, video games and setting up, you know, baseball teams on different video games that I was playing with back in the 80s. It made a lot of sense to me. And that kind of set off, call it a quantitative explosion in my mind that led me into, you know, excelling at portfolio theory, investments, finance, and a few other things in college.
And it sounds like a natural progression because I'd be the same myself. I'm kind of naturally drawn to things where there's statistical analysis or it can be used heavily to predict it or, you know, talk about past behavior. And actually, I found it really interesting because I know you're an American football fan as well. There's a guy I've been following on Twitter lately, Warren Sharp, who does a lot of statistical analysis of, but he did really interesting stuff around the Patriots-Chiefs game recently. You should follow him. But
I'll have a look.
It's fascinating. And obviously, I've mentioned before about my interest on the politics side, but actually around the data that's been used to kind of understand why people make decisions. You know, I've always been fascinated by that. It sounds like, you know, we have a shared interest in that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The decision making at the startup versus a corporate side, like I said, is just so different. And looking back now into the corporate world that I've been away from for 2.5 years, you can kind of clearly see how people are making decisions. And that's okay the way that they do that, because if you're in Greg Chu uses the word corporatism, and I had never, you know, really thought of that word before he started talking about it. And there is something there, which is that, you know, I was looking at something on LinkedIn for one of the guys that I used to work with in BNP Paribas, and he was having like a 2-day offsite with one of his, you know, a global team of people and a bunch of pictures on LinkedIn of happy faces. And, you know, that's nirvana for them. Right? That's what they're there to do. They're to get together and share these experiences. This is a part of the organization that probably has never spoken with a client, never spoken to a customer. But that's what they're there to do. They're there to keep the inertia of the corporate business going. It's much different in startup land where you could be out of money in a week or 2 weeks or a month. Right. And where you're making decisions differently. And yeah, you need to get out and talk to customers every day and find out where you're going to go next. And seeing how startups make decisions with based upon their own experience and their track record and the different, you know, life experiences they've had along the way and what they're dealing with right now, and seeing how corporates may decide, listen, you know, we're a big, huge global financial firm. We have no interest in dealing with a startup. What could a startup possibly do for us? And it's like, well, that's just the exact kind of thinking that we need to change, right? To get people thinking about, you know, yes, this is about getting out and talking to your customers and getting a lot closer to them.
And speaking about talking to people, who do you find that you lean on the most?
My wife. You know, she has been my rock for me since I started the business. I generally, you know, like Ben Horowitz says, there's no handbook, but you do have a wife, right? And, you know, she's a very smart person. She's got a psychology background, you know, a long time in financial services, and I could just bounce things off her and she'll just give me a straight answer. And it's incredibly helpful to have her there. Lean on my, you know, my family, my extended family. My kids are there for inspiration. They talk about, you know, I mentioned something about how I was going to go do some work with a new client. I said the name of the client, and he's like, "What about Norio Ventures? What about Money Never Sleeps?" And I said, no, dude, listen, I can go work with a number of different folks, and Norio Ventures and Money Never Sleeps will still be there. It's like, oh, okay, good. Right. So that part of me, you know, just having that be kind of a family thing keeps me going. My mom and dad, I was running through this the other day for somebody. Looking back at the corporate side of things, I don't ever remember my mom or dad working for a corporation. My mom was a lawyer, then a mediator, retired now. My dad was a social services executive and then became a home healthcare consultant professional with, there's some statistics in there and some computer programming in there, and part of a larger consulting firm that he was a partner of, and now retired. Both of my sisters are professors. You know, there's not a whole heck of a lot of non-entrepreneurial mindsets in my family. So, you know, just having that support system has been very helpful. And then just the network in general, you know, and going out to have coffee meeting after coffee meeting after coffee meeting, you're not going to do it unless you're going to have some fun with it, right? And by opening up to individuals, I tend to get a lot of good information. And not just, you know, that it's espionage, but a lot of information on how people think and how they're making decisions. And that has been quite helpful, is just, you know, the network being the critical, important, you know, second employee of Norio Ventures.
So what's 2019 going to bring for Norio Ventures?
Hopefully it's a lot of me saying no, like we said, and that I'm just becoming more focused with what I do. There's some very interesting engagements that I have in the pipeline right now. One of which will help me get out and spread the word a bit more and evangelize a bit more, but do it in such a way that there's an educational component to that, which is important to me and a family of educators. And there is a couple of venture capital projects that I'm working on as well that will. You know, there'll be a decision made probably within the next, I'd say by the end of February, in terms of which direction that's going to go. And will this business become something that will go out and get investors? And recognizing that you need to start small. I have no investment track record. Like I said, I was always a commercially friendly COO with a good product development mindset. But I've never invested other than my own personal investments. I've never invested professionally in startups or allocated capital to startups or private equity for that matter. So there is some expectation and trust from investors that you need to be able, you need that track record, right? So I can either do that through starting small and building a track record that way with a limited amount of capital, or I can do it through partnering with those that do have a track record and do have the capability to go out and raise money from big investors that they have relationships with. So there's a decision to be made there, right? And it's something that I'll be working out over the course of the next, 4 weeks or so, and then it's all guns blazing from there.
So watch this space.
Watch the space. And it's interesting that out of everything that we've done, Owen, you know, a lot of this media stuff that we do, the podcast, the video, you know, that I've got as part of Norio Ventures now with some other folks that I'm working with, it's all that creative side of it. I love it. And I don't think I'm going to be able to let that go. Yeah. And I think there's a lot more that can be done on that side as well.
Great. So, I mean, over the course of last season, we covered off a whole lot of things that people wouldn't know about you. Is there anything today that you'd like to add to that list?
That is a tough one. I mean, I talked about the fact that I can read backwards. Yeah. I was a lifeguard like you. I knew how to swim, though. I was on the swim team. Oh, here's a good one. Okay. I failed off the tennis team in high school. So my last year in high school, I got an F in...
An F in tennis.
I failed off the tennis team. They wouldn't let me come back because I got an F in something.
Oh,
it might have been trigonometry or something like that. Where, like I said, I just let it go. I kind of hit a point in high school where I'm like, listen, I've learned enough. I'm just going to go to college and learn the rest. I got into a pretty good university at the University of Massachusetts and then said, you know, let's just take it from there. Now, lesson learned, I had to go to the remedial math class as a freshman at the University of Massachusetts, right? So to all the kids out there, you know, do your maths homework. You don't have to have your mom do it for you, you know, to get caught up when you're 14 years old. That's another story completely. But no, yeah, in a nutshell, yes, they're, you know, for every failure, there's a big lesson learned, and people say fail fast. It's a bit of a cliche. It's just fail and then learn from it, right? And move on quickly.
Great. Well, listen, thanks very much for being on the show this week.
My pleasure. It's always, I love being on the show, and I'll be back again next week.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks, Owen.
So that wraps things up for this episode, but don't go just yet. We'd like to thank Pete for opening up his mind for the 34th episode of Money Never Sleeps, a podcast brought to you by Norio Ventures and Owen Fitzgerald, and sponsored by Top Tier Recruitment. Remember, if you or a colleague need help attracting and retaining great talent for your fintech or financial services company, get in touch with the team at Top Tier Recruitment, as they really know their stuff. You can find them at www.toptierrecruitment.com. As for Pete, you can find out more about him by following him on Twitter at Pete Townsend NV, or drop him a line on pete@norioventures.com. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe to Money Never Sleeps on iTunes and leave us a review. Each one helps. Or you can subscribe via our podcast website to other media channels like Spotify and Stitcher. So just go to the subscribe page on www.moneyneversleeps.ie and follow the links. If you're searching directly on iTunes or Spotify, Money Never Sleeps is spelled as all one word. If there's someone you'd like to see featured on an upcoming episode of Money Never Sleeps, drop us a line on info@moneyneversleeps.ie or get in touch on Twitter at @MNSShow. Check out the show notes on moneyneversleeps.ie for more details as well. Besides producing this podcast, Norio Ventures partners with fintech founders and established players in financial services to build new ventures and blaze new trails, and they do their best work when they're helping established players and startups simultaneously. Check them out on norioventures.com to learn more and get in touch. In short, Norio Ventures increase the odds of startup success. Finally, I'm Conan Brophy from Create Sound, and I recorded and edited this podcast. Till next time, thanks for listening. See ya!